Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order this hearing of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Today is March 12th, and we do have a quorum. So the first order of business will be approval of the minutes of March 7th in our packets. Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair, I'd move for moving the minutes of March 7th, please.
All right. Thank you. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes of March 7th, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay, the first bill on the agenda today is going to be House File 2421, Representative Wolgamott. Representative Wolgamott, welcome to the committee. Since you're not on the committee this term, you were last term, I will move that House File 2421 be re-referred to the General Register. So with that, I don't think there's an amendment with the bill. Am I correct on that?
You are correct, Madam Chair.
All right. So, Representative Wolgamott, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of this committee. Great to be back before you all. I'm here today to present House File 2421, which is a bill to add a new designation of thrombectomy-capable centers granted by the Joint Commission. Passing House File 2421 would acknowledge the latest evidence of the benefits of thrombectomy, a surgical procedure to remove blood clots for treating large vessel acute ischemic stroke. The certification is designed for hospitals providing endovascular procedures and post-procedural care. Thrombectomy-capable designation under this legislation would be a level 2 stroke center. But you don't have to take my word for the benefits of this legislation, Madam Chair. I have a testifier with me who can provide further light on the importance of passing House File 2421.
All right. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Liebling and members of the House Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. I'm Paul Wirtz, State Government Relations Director for the American Heart Association. The American Heart Association supports the passage of House File 2421, a new designation granted by the Joint Commission in collaboration with the American Heart Association and the American Stroke Association, recognizes the latest evidence demonstrating the safety and efficacy of thrombectomy, a surgical procedure used to remove blood clots in the treatment of large vessel acute ischemic stroke. House File 2421 will integrate thrombectomy-capable centers within Minnesota's stroke system of care to provide better outcomes for stroke patients and increase their chances of returning home to loved ones to resume their daily activities. Thank you for the opportunity to express the AHA's support for this important legislation. And if I will, Madam Chair, I was in communication yesterday with Dr. Christopher Strybe. Dr. Strybe testified on this bill in the Senate. Unfortunately, he could not be here today, and I know the committee received his letter of testimony in electronically. I got his letter last night. He apologizes for not being here, but I just would like to read a little excerpt from it. Thrombectomy-capable stroke centers are hospitals that are certified in providing endovascular thrombectomy for stroke patients. Formal recognition of the thrombectomy-capable stroke center designation is essential to help emergency medical services, first responders, and family members get stroke patients to the most appropriate hospital as quickly as possible. Furthermore, formal recognition of the thrombectomy-capable stroke center designation should motivate additional hospitals to attain the status, improving the timeliness of emergency stroke care across our state. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
All right. Well, thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room who wants to testify on the bill? All right. I'm not seeing anyone. So with that, we can take some questions and discussion. Representative Perryman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Wolgamott, I have the question of, do you know how many hospitals currently are thrombectomy certified in our state?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Perryman. I don't have that number available right now, but I'll certainly look into that and get you that information.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Rep. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Wolgamont. I can relate to this just a little bit, and but my concern is if we don't know where we have thrombectomy surgical or capable stroke centers in northern Minnesota, I believe when I did the research on this that I couldn't possibly get to one of those even with a helicopter and good weather in the time that I would need it for where I reside, and there's at least 2 hours more of Minnesota north of me. So just wondering, something that we should consider, maybe we need to look at the North Dakota. I know we can't legislate North Dakota. I get that. But maybe just that insight of what we have possible, unless you guys have another area that it would go. So,
Representative Wolgamott, did you want to respond, or are you testifying?
Well, I'll just say, Madam Chair and Representative Keel, thank you for bringing that up. Certainly getting the right patient to the right facility at the right time for the appropriate care can and does save lives. So any work that you would want to do with myself and the folks who are putting this forward, I would more than welcome that opportunity.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mr. Wirtz.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. I would reference Dr. Stribe's letter where he does, now this is Southdale, mentions as a thrombectomy-capable stroke center. But also Alina's Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids and Ascension's St. Mary's Hospital in Duluth. Now, we obviously need to get into the northwest quadrant of the state, and I think that's part of the motivation of this bill is that we add this fourth level of stroke care to our registry, and then that will, because this is where it really, you know, that patient care is so critical. As we like to say in the American Heart Association, time is brain. I mean, those critical minutes are so essential. And if we can direct that patient to the appropriate stroke care center, that's essential. And hopefully this registry, this fourth designation brings that along.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we have a lot to do today, but I want to add to that. My husband had a cardiac arrest a few years ago, and by the time they identified it and he had the angioplasty that he needed, there was no heart damage. Recovery was still there, but that ability to help people to recover quicker, and also the importance of even cost is much less because we can, and it's certainly with thrombectomy issues, it's really important that we help people as soon as we can. So thank you very much.
All right, Representative Backer.
Yeah, just ditto what Representative Keel said. I've been on several runs with strokes, and when I got started, we didn't have the stroke drug to unblock to help the clots when I got started 29 years ago. So it would, and I'm glad that we're adding this in Minnesota, but us in West Central Minnesota, Representative Keel will know that we go to Stanford in Fargo or Essentia in Fargo, or we're going down to Sioux Falls. So I'm more on the record. We want to push west because generally our population in greater Minnesota are the ones that see those cardiac issues and also stroke issues. And you're right. That's what kills the brain. So more so FYI, thank you for the indulgence, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Nadal. Okay. All right. With that, final word, Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you again, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for your consideration of House File 2421. I just want to remind this committee and members of the public that stroke is the sixth leading cause of death and a major cause of disability in Minnesota. And by passing House File 2421, we can help ensure immediate access to safe care and also ensure that more Minnesotans can return home to their families and lives after suffering from a stroke. I ask for your support of House File 2421.
All right. Well, thank you. So I will renew the motion that House File 2421 be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
Okay, next up is we're going to take House File 2669, Representative Hewitt. And let's see, I believe there is an amendment. Okay, so I'm going to move that House File 2669 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus. And there is an A1 amendment that I believe is the author's amendment to put the bill in the form in which you'd like to have it discussed.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
So I will move the A1 amendment. So let's adopt that, and then we can discuss the bill as amended. So all in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So, Representative Hewitt, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. This is a basically a bill for the funeral industry. It's another option for families. We have cremation, we have alcohydrolysis, and we have traditional burial. This one here puts into law basically natural organic reduction. I am surprised myself on how many emails I've received on this. Basically, it lets the natural organic reduction take place after death. With me today, I have four testifiers. One of them is our esteemed colleague from former Senator Lane, and I would like to turn it over to my testifiers at this point.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. So not only former senator, but more importantly, former Representative Lane. Yes. So welcome to the committee. Please stay your name and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Carolyn Lane, and I was in the House from 2006 to 2016 and then in the Senate for 4 years. But I like you guys better. It's good to be back. At some point in our lives, we all have to consider how we would like our bodies taken care of after our death. What alternatives do we have? Well, the alternatives today, as Representative Hewitt said, are some form of burial or some form of cremation. But I personally have been delighted to hear about a newer alternative for returning my body to the earth in a renewable way, natural organic reduction. After hearing that this is sometimes called human composting, it can catch us as odd. But it doesn't take long for that to spark as an idea that is very intriguing, truly a transition from earth to earth. No casket, no plot to personally own forever, or ashes in an urn, which are all perfectly fine choices. I could consider any of them, but I am excited about this. And you will hear briefly the story of Steve, who chose this before he died recently, but he had to go out to Washington to have it happen, because we don't have him here, it here yet. And from a teacher of mortuary science students at the U, then you will hear briefly about the science and safety of it. As you can see from your handouts, this is growing in popularity. About 3 years ago, the first facility was opened in Washington State, and now five facilities are in operation. Seven states have passed it. Arizona, which has a Republican legislature, is moving at the same time as we are. A dozen more states are in the works. Our implementation date, gives the department time to put it together, is July 1st, 2025. And so let's just get this done. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. So the next testifier is Taylor Johnson. And I'm going to just remind folks to please be very brief, because we have a lot to get to today. So welcome to the committee. And the next will be Janet McGee. So if Janet McGee could be ready. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Taylor Johnson. And after receiving a diagnosis of terminal cancer, Steve heard a panel on the radio talking about NOR and decided that was the disposition for him. He was quickly disappointed to realize that it was not a legal form of disposition in the state of Minnesota, so his second choice was green burial, which is how he found us at Intera Green Burial by Mueller Memorial, where we provide sustainable disposition options. During a call with one of our funeral directors, Mandy, he was disappointed to find out that it wasn't an option, but he talked to Mandy, and Mandy said, oh, no, we can actually do that. What Steve didn't know is that literally days before this, I had just come back from the first body composting conference in March of 2023 in Denver, where I spoke to the scientist who was the pioneer in NOR, Lynn Carpenter Boggs, and she's from Washington State University, and I connected with the wonderful people at Return Home, an NOR provider in Washington State. I had asked them if they had ever provided the service to anyone outside of Washington, and they said they provided NOR for people in 19 different states. And I came back excited that this safe and sustainable disposition option was something we could offer right now, though far away. I returned to Minnesota and talked with our team, who were immediately on board because we are always enthusiastic at the opportunity to empower Minnesotans with choice. And Steve Wheeler called us 2 days after that meeting. So we were able to say yes to Steve. It may seem hard to believe, but Steve was excited at this plan for his disposition because it would help make meaning out of his own death. Steve died last September, and he got his wish to be transformed into highly regenerative soil. And he sat down with me, and we talked for about 30 minutes. And he told me what NOR meant to him, and I recorded it. And so I could share with you today, this is exactly why he wanted me to record it, so I could tell you exactly what he had to say. And he said that I can take this one action, this final action, and make some good, leave the world a better place than I found it, makes me feel better. It really, really does. And that helps. That helps in the process that I'm going through of dying, is knowing, you know what? In the end, this is going to be a better place because of my actions, my choice. What's that old saying? Leave the world a better place than you found it. And with this act, I can at least go out on a high note and say I have left the world just a little bit better than when I found it. Thank you.
Thank you. Janet McGee and then Eric Halas. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you for hearing me today. My name is Janet McGee. While I work full-time at the University of Minnesota's Mortuary Science Program, I'm actually not here testifying for them today, but rather on behalf of myself. I'm a Minnesota licensed mortician, a funeral educator, and a lifetime Minnesota mother who lost a child 8 years ago in a tragic home accident. As a licensed mortician, I see the need for legalizing NOR and regulating it like we do funeral establishments, requiring a Minnesota licensed mortician to operate them. As a funeral director and funeral educator, I see mortuary science students excited about the possibility of bringing NOR to Minnesota. I attended the TerraCon conference in Tacoma last month, and I saw many aspiring funeral directors in attendance. Consumer needs are changing, and we're seeing a greater demand for eco-friendly and personalized burial options. So the next generation of funeral service professionals has to be equipped to accommodate these rising consumer demands by offering all options to Minnesota families. When I lost my 22-month-old son, Ted, in 2016, I visited him at the funeral home every other day from the day he died until the day of his funeral. If I had known about NOR then, I might have chosen it. However, I could not imagine how difficult it would have been to send his body to a different state for the NOR process to be completed. While having a background in funeral service might have made my situation unique, a mother wanting to be near her child's body as she works to accept her new reality is not. The NOR process takes longer than burial and cremation, but would encourage families to be more active in their loved one's funeral. In our busy world, it would be another way to give the living Minnesotans space to start their grief journey at their own pace and in their own way. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Halas, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Janet and Taylor. Appreciate the opportunity to share my perspective. My name is Eric Halas. I'm currently a fellow at the Finnovation Institute in Minneapolis, where I've been exploring the feasibility of bringing natural organic production to the state of Minnesota. While my personal interest was sparked by the stories like Steve Wheeler's, my role as a fellow has been to look at how this process works, if the service can be provided safely, and ultimately, if so, can we bring it and provide it replicated at scale here in Minnesota. To date, natural organic reduction, or the contained accelerated conversion of the body into nutrient-rich compost, has been offered safely to well over 900 individuals in the state of Washington alone. So 900 folks like Steve had that opportunity. I had the chance to visit two of the operating facilities in Washington, and what I can say, what I've learned, is that these spaces are safe, they are clean, they are welcoming spaces. As Janet mentioned, there's the opportunity at one to even visit the vessel over the course of the natural organic reduction process. The composting vessels and the equipment are well designed. The aerobic composting process, which has been refined through research and development, has created the right balance of natural materials, the proper aeration, the timing of rotations, outlined in a way so that providers have the opportunity to create and maintain the ideal environments to help facilitate this process. All of this is grounded in science, and that science has demonstrated the capacity to reduce pathogens in line with the EPA's process for further reduction pathogen standards, in addition to reducing soluble metals as well as pharmaceuticals. While the research itself in that Washington State University study that Taylor mentioned is clear, I think what I've been most excited about in the state of Washington is the capacity of providers to translate that research into implementation and to do it safely. There are three providers currently operating and in compliance, working hand-in-hand with the Health Department, Funeral and Cemetery Board, as well as third-party labs to test and vet the material that are being reintroduced to families in the environment. They are doing it safely and supporting hundreds of families out there, and as well as folks in Minnesota who are making the journey. And I believe that if we have the right folks kind of working in concert here in Minnesota, that we can offer it safely as well. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Judy Cook. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Judy Cook with Cook Strong Salwood. I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Funeral Directors Association, which is made up of more than 600 licensed funeral directors and over 250 licensed funeral establishments. We want to thank Representative Hewitt for his work on House File 2669. However, we do not believe that the bill is ready to move forward at this time. The Minnesota Funeral Directors Association supports providing natural organic reduction to the public. It is another option for families to provide a meaningful disposition for their loved ones. However, we need to further consider factors in the bill that will ensure protection of public health, protection of the individuals working in the natural organic reduction facility, and ensure protection of the dignity of the decedent. It is currently known that natural organic reduction does not kill certain classes of pathogens. Some include prions, tuberculosis, and E. coli. Due to the direct handling of human remains in the process, we would also like further review the impacts of lines 18.24 through 18.29, which allow for unlicensed personnel to perform natural organic reduction. These individuals do not have a well-defined level of training required. The Minnesota Funeral Directors Association supports natural organic reduction. However, discussion between MFDA and the bill proponents is ongoing. So we believe this bill is premature as stakeholder cooperation continues but has not yet reached consensus. Further, last year legislation was passed that requires the Minnesota Department of Health to perform a study of natural organic reduction. The study is due in January of 2025. We believe that the results of the study should be considered prior to moving forward with the bill. As I said earlier, the Minnesota Funeral Directors Association supports natural organic reduction and would like to have the opportunity to provide meaningful input on this to ensure protection of public health, safety, and dignity. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Just to remind everyone, this is being laid over, so Ms. Cook, hopefully there is time for continued work on the bill. Okay. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on this bill? Not seeing anyone. Okay, we'll go to questions. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did take some time, Representative Hewitt, to listen to testimony of Stephen, I believe it was, and did some research myself. And one of the comments that was made was that I believe Washington, I didn't check this out, but that Washington allows for composting of farm animals. I won't say all our pets and stuff. But and we've done that with our dogs, and they're in our backyard. So, but my question is, or concern is that Minnesota does not allow for composting of animals, farm animals. My brothers have hogs, and they have an incinerator that is well managed. That some days they have one large hog that dies and they have to put it in the incinerator, and sometimes they have multiples, and some months they have nothing, which, hallelujah, you're not losing your population. But my concern is this going to be a challenge for thinking about composting in Minnesota? Because while it's not the same, it is still composting human or live bodies, and I think that is something that we have to think about.
Well, hopefully not live bodies, Representative.
Excuse me. I did not mean that. I am not burying anybody, animals or others. So.
We're all sort of composting alive anyway, I guess. But, yeah, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Keel. That's a great question, and I think as the bill is laid over, we're going to have to answer more. We're also waiting for a study, too, on this. And so we need to decide as a state which way we want to go on this. New York allows human composting to be considered compost, which a lot of people feel it is, whereas some states regulate what the compost actually is. So I would be willing to work on this as we go along. Thank you, Representative.
I think it's and Madam Chair, can I?
Field.
Thank you. Just wanted to point out also that my husband's buddy passed away last year, and his wife chose to cremate, but he is buried underneath a tree, and I thought that's a great way to do it too, and we can do that legally already in Minnesota. So another way of doing it. I realize there's a little bit more to it, but I'm anxious to hear the study and just know how this works and how we keep people safe.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Keel. I think one of the differences I think here is that it takes a lot of energy to cremate,
Yes. Whereas
this doesn't. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. Do or would cadaver dogs detect the compost?
Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, can you repeat the question louder? I know I'm asking you to be louder. It's weird, but
okay. Law enforcement utilizes certain techniques when they're doing investigations. One are cadaver dogs. I was trying to find out if cadaver dogs would detect with this compost.
Madam Chair,
Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, I think that's kind of out of our preview, but I will definitely be able to get you some information. I would have to talk to people that deal with cadaver dogs, and I'll be happy to get that back to you, Representative Quam.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, since this is being laid over, that would have bearing on what documentation of locations of this was utilized on, so that be able to be, I guess, known for some possible future.
Okay, well, Representative Crum, I don't know. I'm not sure I follow that, but I think that Representative Hewitt is correct. It's kind of outside the purview of this legislation, and I don't know if that would be an Ag Committee thing or exactly what, but I think it's kind of a different issue here. Anyway, seeing no other questions, Representative Hewitt, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. Nice short discussion there. Again, we need to give our citizens an option here, and they're asking for it, so I would ask that we look at this seriously as moving this legislation this year. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. So with that, House File 2669, as amended, is laid over. Thank you. All right. Representative Hewitt gets to stay in the hot seat there, and we're going to move House File 4738 before the committee, and that is going to, so I will move House File 4738 be re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Finance and Policy. And there is an A2 amendment. Do you want to move that right now, Representative Hewitt?
I would like to do the amendment, the A2, and I think there's an A3, is that right?
Yeah.
I'd like to do the amendments now and put off the Ds for after testimony.
Okay, so let's do that then. So I will move the A2 author's amendment, which is there are will be an A2 and an A3. So let's move the A2 to get the bill in the order in which the author would like to discuss it. So all in favor of adoption of the A2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And then the A3 amendment, Representative Hewitt?
Again, I'd like to move that.
All right, so I will move the A3 amendment on behalf of Representative Hewitt. So all in favor of the A3, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. So to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And Madam Chair is exactly right. I am on the hot seat. I have found the most controversial bill I have presented in 6 years. And everybody says you'll get in that sweet spot. I have not found the sweet spot on this bill, which means it's probably not a bad bill. So basically, I have been assigned to the MSRB by the speaker. And right away, we found, I should say, opportunities there for correction. But we found some stuff we didn't like. And Senator Lang was my opposite on that. And what became of that was what you're going to hear today. Minnesotans expect when they dial 911 that we're going to come, that the EMS or fire or police are going to be there. And I really had to philosophically look at what parts do we own as a state. I mean, do we own the transportation between hospital to hospital? Maybe their licenses, but we don't really, that's not us. What we own is when somebody is in crisis or somebody needs us, we have to make sure that our citizens are protected. Today, you'll hear from a number of my former colleagues in the room that are not for this bill. In fact, I don't have a testifier for this bill, and that's on purpose. That's because you, sitting in these seats, are answering for those testifiers, because those are the people that ride in the ambulance. Those are the people that get the bills. Those are the people that go down on the street that we need to protect, because that's our job as legislators. We have to make sure when someone's down that at least we're sending a qualified person. Representative Backer, I want to thank you for your years of service. And you brought up the three R's, recruitment, retention, and revenue. I have a different three R's. Mine are right place, right caregiver, the three rights, basically. Right time, right place, right person. And that's what we're responsible for, is to get the right person there at the right time, at the right place, because we know that time makes a difference. Unfortunately, Minnesota is falling short on this. And unfortunately, some of this can be traced back to its regulatory arm, the EMSRB. Now, it's funny, in room 10 years ago, I was sitting in a seat to bring forth the EMSRB and support it. It was a good time. It was a good time for that to come out of health. Today, I'm sitting in a different seat by myself with my good friend, Senator, behind me to look at this and say, we need a change. Why did this come up? Because in the OLA report, we clearly saw that in findings 1 through 5, that the EMSRB failed to reimburse our regions, failed to reimburse our training institutes, failed to reimburse our departments in outstate for their training needs. This was several years ago. In outstate Minnesota, we do not have a pipeline of EMTs or paramedics. This is a direct result of state's failure, and that's a direct result of the MSRB. Now, that came up in the audit. There's a lot more stuff in that audit that I'm not going to bring up today that really we should discuss, but it's time now for us to move forward on looking for a new option here and bringing this closer back to us. Another big flag that came up is the industry recently came to us as legislators and asked for a bailout of $125 million. And I can honestly say they probably need it. But here's the problem is that when we attach $125 million to something, we all know that we need to put our rules in it. We need close because something's going on here. Something seriously is going on here, and we need to correct it. Most of the problems that we're having are in outstate. They're in greater Minnesota. And we do have some concerns in the metro. You're going to hear a lot of discussion today on, you know, giving power to one person, and this was taken out of the blue. Anybody that knows me knows for 6 years I have been discussing this plan because I saw it right away. I saw that it's time to change it. And, yes, it's unique. We will be the only one in the country that has a Department of EMS that reports directly to the governor. But it's time that we step up. This department needs attention. This service needs attention. As things change in this industry, such as mental health response, pre-hospital care, we have to be able to move forward. We can't go to a board that basically is now meeting every other month. We need somebody that can take action and move the plan forward. So I want to hear from the testifiers. Like I said, be ready. It's going to be a bumpy road for me and you. But sometimes, you know, that's what we have to do. So, Madam Chair, if we can move to testifiers.
Thank you very much, Representative Hewitt. And thank you for all of your work on this. I know you've been working this issue for years, and it isn't easy. This is one of those issues where everybody is never going to be happy. And so thank you for that. And I'm glad to have the bill here today. So first testifier, and we're going to ask everyone to stick to 2 minutes because we have quite a few people. First is Dr. Nick Simpson. And you know what I'm going to do is, Representative Hewitt, if you would come and sit at the table or in the back there. I'm going to ask two at a time to have people come up. Oh, you do? Oh, perfect. You can stay there then. Great. So Dr. Nick Simpson, next will be Kevin Lee. So as the person ahead of you gets up, please fill in so that we can go quickly. And after Kevin Lee will be Mark Contarato. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Dr. Nick Simpson, and I'm the president of the Minnesota chapter of the National Association of EMS Physicians. I'm here before you this morning on behalf of this group who have dedicated their careers to serving their patients and communities through the provision of EMS care. This includes direct medical care as well as EMS medical oversight. The Minnesota chapter of NAEMSP has significant concern with House File 4738. While there are a number of concerning aspects of this proposed bill, for the sake of time, I'll focus on one for the committee, and that is the removal of physician oversight from EMS in Minnesota. EMS is at the confluence of healthcare, public health, public safety, and emergency management. It is a complex and multifaceted system, which is a critical safety net for residents and visitors of our great state. The concept of a board, is also critically important to keeping those varied perspectives in mind with big decisions that affect our patients and communities. In current Minnesota Statute 144E.01, there are three physicians on the board. In fact, the very first member listed is a board-certified emergency medicine physician. House File 4738 seeks to move that critically important perspective and voice to a quiet advisory role. This is contrary to all best practices and national standards. I have copies that I'm happy to share of position statements from our national organization, NAEMSP, describing how vital physician oversight is in EMS. I also have copies of another joint statement from that same organization, NAEMSP, the American College of Emergency Physicians, and the National Association of State EMS Officials, citing the importance of physician oversight of the systems of EMS at the state level. We ask to be a voice of our patients, who are every resident and visitor of Minnesota. As such, we want to keep physician input into our state EMS system so we can keep the medical care of our patients and the communities that we serve front and center in all discussions. I urge the members of this committee to keep a strong physician voice and varied perspectives integral to the critical healthcare safety net.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Kevin Lee, then Mark Contarato, and then John Ling. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding House File 4738. My name is Kevin Lee, and I am the Emergency Services Relationship Specialist for North Memorial Health. As many of you know, North Memorial Health consists of two hospitals, one in Robbinsdale and one in Maple Grove. We also have over 20 clinic locations and an expansive statewide EMS division with both ground and air ambulance services. I've been working full-time at EMS for over 40 years. Most of that time has been spent in Minnesota and outstate Minnesota. My last 25 years have been spent at North Memorial Ambulance in the Brainerd region. I was the district chief for 15 years, so I'm acutely aware of the challenges that are being faced by EMS providers, not only in the state of Minnesota, but in outstate Minnesota. I have concerns about House File 4738, which would replace the EMSRB with the Office of Emergency Medical Services. During the five legislative EMS task force meetings that took place across the state, not one testifier mentioned restructuring or eliminating the EMSRB. Instead, the focus was almost entirely on sustainability and workforce challenges. In 2022, the OLA released their evaluation of the EMSRB. In the recommendations, they stated that the legislature should consider structural changes to the EMSRB board membership, but there was no mention of replacing the EMSRB with an Office of Emergency Medical Services. The Minnesota Ambulance Association has actually been supportive of the proposed board structure changes. Under House File 4738, the director of the Office of Emergency Medical Services would have the ultimate authority to license ambulance services, establish and modify primary service areas, and certify personnel, amongst other things. The board members and physicians would only serve in an advisory role. This concentration of power is concerning, and it could further destabilize an already stressed EMS system in Minnesota.
I have to ask you to wrap up, please.
Stop?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. But you should put that in the notes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mark Contrado, and then John Ling, and then Sam Erickson. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. I'm Dr. Mark Contrado, and I've been a practicing emergency medicine physician and EMS physician medical director in Minnesota for over 30 years. I am currently the medical director for Plymouth Fire Rescue, and today I'm also representing my outstate EMS medical director partners. Collectively, we provide local medical direction and supervision through a nonprofit organization for over 110 medical services encompassing 32 Minnesota counties, and have a cumulative experience of over 100 years in this service. The Minnesota EMSRB was developed through the collaborative efforts of physicians and other EMS-oriented organizations in the early 1990s. This was developed to provide a unified entity for medical regulation, but also encouraging physician EMS medical director input in the ongoing development and functioning of emergency medical services in Minnesota. This was a monumental accomplishment at that time, and it was looked on by many other states as a goal which many of them would hope to achieve. Many of the physicians and individuals who participated in this development were considered some of the leading national proponents of EMS at that time. The OLA report exposed shortcomings and problems in the office, but as organizations grow and evolve, changes have to occur. The EMSRB has made significant progress and improvements in rectifying the deficiencies noted in the OLA report. My partners and I feel that this office is now functioning at an extremely high level. To change this board from an entity that now has collaborative functioning with EMS professionals and EMS medical directors throughout the state to one that is replaced by a commissioner who would cause significant harm. The current bill provides for a non-integrated advisory board, and they are relegated to only minor functions. The condition of EMS in Minnesota is in a rapidly changing state. We are seeing the closure of rural hospitals, which causes EMS services to take on more of the emergent load of caring for the public. In addition, many of these local EMS services are not only experiencing financial stress,
but also the problem of funding for trained personnel. Over 70% of these services are provided by local entities, with the majority of these being BLS and first responder services. We feel that the need for regulatory oversight combined with strong medical direction input, cooperation, and assistance has never been greater. In conclusion, my partners and I feel that the establishment of an appointed EMS commissioner to replace the director and board of the EMSRB would be a step backward in the development and growth of EMS in the state of Minnesota. The interaction and cooperation between the EMSRB director and the integrated EMSRB board are crucial to the ongoing health and development of EMS in the state of Minnesota.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. John Ling and then Sam Erickson. And folks, when you hear the bell ring, you really should like wrap up what you're saying, finish your sentence, but please conclude.
Very good. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm John Ling and I am an EMS and emergency physician with over 27 years of experience leading EMS agencies and systems in Minnesota, the United States, and internationally. I'm here today to provide testimony in strong opposition to HF 4738. I believe this bill is unnecessary and will result in significant harm to Minnesota's EMS system and our citizens. There are multiple challenges facing delivery of EMS medicine to Minnesotans today, but this bill is not the pathway forward to improve the system. Many in our community look at EMS as a method to transport patients to or between hospitals, but this perception does not reflect the reality of the healthcare service that we provide to our community. EMS is more than just patient transport, it's a practice of medicine. I've submitted written testimony, including documents from national organizations that define standards for oversight of EMS medicine at the local and state levels. Most importantly, one of these joint statements explicitly states that, quote, it is essential that the lead agency for EMS within each of the 50 states has a state EMS medical director. Current oversight of EMS medicine provided by the EMSRB and state EMS medical director in Minnesota follows the foundation structures that these organizations call for and that the public should expect. HF 4738 proposes the opposite. This bill proposes to remove any of the checks and balances, due process, and physician-led oversight that the current system affords. It would empower a single director to make sweeping, unilateral decisions regarding the structure and operation of the EMS system and to hand down disciplinary judgments and punishments without following legislative or other process designed to represent or protect our citizens, EMS agencies, or EMS clinicians. This is a dangerous precedent and is antithetical to the democratic structure and due process the citizens expect from our government. As a physician leader working with stakeholders from local to the national level to develop EMS standards, I try to find opportunities to revise proposed language and build consensus to achieve mutual goals. Unfortunately, this bill goes so much against established principles of oversight of EMS medicine that I must strongly urge this committee to reject the bill in its entirety. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Sam Erickson and then John Fox. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Leibling and committee members. My name is Sam Erickson. I'm the Vice President of HCAPE. We're the labor union that represents 911 paramedics, EMTs, and dispatchers at Hennepin EMS. The first thing, I wanted to just thank the committee and Representative Hewitt specifically for bringing this bill forward. I think it is incredibly important that we give EMS the spotlight it deserves, and our industry has for a long time kind of been on the back burner, and so I really do appreciate that Representative Hewitt has been kind of in the trenches with us for decades, and like he's a clinician, he's done this work, and so I know that bringing this forward is going to be good for EMS in the long run. Unfortunately, as the bill is written, we do oppose it. We feel that this bill has been rushed to the legislature without stakeholder input, and one of our biggest fears is that the director of this new organization would become a political football. This director is appointed by the governor, and as we know in Minnesota, the governor's mansion swings from year to year. What our fear is that the EMS system, this public safety that's so vital, could swing with that director position as politics tends to move. There's no check and balance against that, and The other thing that has been really disturbing to us, especially for a DFL-led bill, is that there's no voice for organized labor built into this bill as it's written. There are many organized labor unions within the EMS space, and we need to have a seat at the table if we are to get rid of the EMSRB and make an entirely new office. That's extremely important. Finally, there's a lot of language in this bill about PSA, or primary service area. This is an incredibly important issue. We cannot allow a political autocrat to control critical ambulance services for communities. We must have additional stakeholder input and checks and balances in place so that residents of many municipalities throughout Minnesota do not have their vital services changed based on the political calendar. Thank you so much for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you for your testimony. So next we have John Fox, and then Tom Edmondson, and then Dr. Andrew Stevens. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I don't have much of a prepared statement. I am a paramedic that works in outstate Minnesota, and I'm pretty much looking at the list the only one today. A big part of that is we have been exceptionally lucky in our staffing that we have a volunteer crew that's allowed us to be here to talk to you guys today. But what I wanted to share is a story with you. Recently, my granddaughter, who's 9 years old, that lives with us, we decided she's really interested in STEM and things, so we watched Apollo 13. And it got me to thinking, how did they solve their crisis? We have a crisis in EMS. They had a catastrophic accident, and what did they do? They grabbed the smartest people in the world, got them together, and tried to solve the problems. We have the smartest people in the world, literally some of the most experts in our field sitting in this room today, to try and do that. NASA did not go and shut down NASA, transfer it to something else, blame everybody, and just go off to the races. What they did is they created a team of people that really know what they're doing and get it down to business. You have all the other technical pieces, but when the time comes in this crisis, which has been brewing for 22 years, has now, we need funding. We need staff. There are no other people in here today. Senator Backer, or Representative Backer, your service is probably pretty tight today, I'm guessing. We're in the same boat. You're probably uncovered, or you're begging and borrowing. We're doing the same thing. We need funding, and we need staffing. I'll yield the rest of my time. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Next is Tom Edmondson, and then Dr. Andrew Stevens, and then Andrew Slama.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Tom Edmondson, and I serve as Chief of EMS for M Health Fairview. I have over 20 years of EMS leadership experience, including 7 years in this current role. I am currently serving a governor appointment to the Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board since July of 2023, so relatively new. I wanted to make it known that I am here on my own accord and not speaking on behalf of the EMSRB. I am here today to express deep concerns about House File 4738 and its likely negative effect on access to emergency medical services across our great state. House File 4738 would replace the Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board with a director-led Office of Emergency Medical Services. The EMSRB was established by the legislator back in 1995, and its 15 governor-appointed members represent experience and expertise in healthcare, public safety, and the public. This board has multiple physicians appointed to ensure the quality of care being provided statewide is top-notch. The 2022 Office of Legislative Auditor Evaluation Report pointed out several areas for the EMSRB to improve upon, none of which recommended abolishing the EMSRB and replacing it with the director-led office of EMS. Over the past year, the Emergency Medical Services Legislative Task Force had held meetings across the state, and it should be noted that there were no public comments supporting the transition of the EMSRB to a director-led office of EMS. I am overly concerned with the unilateral power the director position would hold. It should be noted that no other area of health and or public safety grants this much control to any one individual. Without oversight and accountability measures in place specifically from medical directors from throughout the state, it could lead to ineffective decision-making and ultimately lead to harm to Minnesotans. Patient care treatment methods may not be the same throughout the state, and ultimately representation from these outstate medical directors carries a lot of weight. I urge you and this committee not to move House File 4738 forward and instead allow the interdisciplinary group that is the EMSRB to develop shared solutions which will ensure Minnesota residents continue to have comprehensive access to EMS throughout the state. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the time.
Thank you for your testimony. Dr. Andrew Stevens, followed by Andrew Slama, followed by Jake Howard.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. It's nice to be in front of you again. I'm Andrew Stevens. I'm an EMS physician, board certified and fellowship trained. I also represent a multitude of cities and communities: Edina, Eagan, Burnsville, Prior Lake, Savage, Scott County, the Medwakaton community, as well as a multitude of outstate rural-based services. I also agree that it's beautiful that Representative Hewitt has brought EMS to light. The thoughts that now in 2 years we have the opportunity to talk in front of you and discuss the multitude and complexity of issues is a really great thing. I also have difficulty with fully supporting the legislation as it sits now. It has in a way a feeling to me of the emperor in new clothes. 911 to an ambulance transport should be an easy and basic thing, but you guys are all getting a crash course in the complexity of this. The OLA auditor report has been mostly a positive thing. Nowhere in it does it mention the dissolution of the EMSRB, rather reformatting, as well as multiple pieces in this, which includes local governmental units input into EMS. As someone who really has to make decisions that impact not myself, but everyone in my community, including myself, the very worry with this is the complexity of 911 to a transport could be severely disrupted by essentially intervening in and dissolution of the powers that exist. To kind of use the quote of the office, this looks like we're trying to hit the red button and we're producing a bunch of assistants to the assistant manager. That doesn't feel like the right approach. The events of February reminded me how the EMS and fire community can come together and do great things. I think we have more great things to come. And I think we should put a pause on this and continue to do the work that has come out of our previous testimony in this committee to start working towards achievable goals. The thoughts of complexity being fixed by a single individual, I think, very much jeopardizes what we all care about most. Someone dials 911 because they need help. I'm afraid this will not cause help. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Andrew Slama, Jake Howard, Michael Schultz. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Andrew Slama. I'm the fire chief for Edina Fire, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association. Many of you are familiar with the 2022 report done by the OLA and subsequent updates in 2023 and 2024. The findings were profound. Among them, the EMSRB has been largely ineffective in its regulation and support of ambulance services in Minnesota. The board has failed to provide sufficient oversight and agency's activities. Of the agency's activities, EMSRB's board composition and unique responsibilities create risks for conflict of interest. The Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association appreciates Representative Hewitt's intent to hold the oversight entities accountable and recognize the current makeup of the EMSRB does not hold providers accountable. The current PSA model does not allow some municipalities control over who serves their area and or how they are served. We agree with the OLA report that there is an opportunity to change the makeup of the existing EMSRB and put in additional protections for accountability. Many of the testifiers have outlined the OLA recommendations, which I strongly recommend you to review and consider as you look at any proposed legislation. This bill, as drafted, creates a director who's appointed by the governor. When compared to other public safety governor-appointed positions, those areas have complete local control over the services provided, therefore maintain a degree of consistency even when administrations have no control over who, even when administrations change every 4 or 8 years. This is not the case in EMS. Currently, many municipalities have no control over who serves their area and how they are served. Creating a director position that could dramatically change depending on the administration creates uncertainty and could lead to inconsistent standards and enforcement and delays in providing service. The Chiefs Association appreciate the work of Representative Hewitt, Backer, and Madam Chair have done in traveling the state with the legislative task force, hearing from residents across the state. The crisis cannot be solved by one bill, and we thank you for your work towards the meaningful oversight, accountability, and innovation of EMS.
All right, thank you for your testimony. Jake Howard, Michael Schultz, Bjorn Peterson, Mike Juntunen. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jake Howard. I'm the Director of Operations for Bemidji Ambulance Service. I'm here today to voice my opposition to this bill. I echo the sentiments conveyed by all of the previous speakers, except for the last one, as to why this bill should not be passed. Bemidji Ambulance Service is a privately owned service in its third generation of ownership. In the 2023 calendar year, we received just under 6,500 calls for service. Approximately 5,700 of those calls for service resulted in a transport. Last week, I met with the billing company that we work with, and I learned that 70% of the transports that I received reimbursement for are paid for by either Medicare or Medicaid. 9% of my transports are reimbursed, are paid by private insurance. It would be easy to believe that given the current state of EMS in Minnesota that the overseeing body at the state level should be overhauled. However, I will tell you that the problem does not result from an ineffective Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board. I would suspect that all of the managers in this room know exactly what the problem is. The average ambulance call cost me over $721 according to collected state data, and yet I receive under $500 for the majority of those calls. Until the system of reimbursement for patient care delivered by ambulance services is updated, there is no change at the state regulatory level that will result in the problems facing EMS being resolved. In approximately 2 months, I will be losing one of my full-time paramedics because she's in the process of finishing her nursing degree. She loves her job working as a paramedic, but she has already informed me that she will be leaving because her anticipated starting pay as a brand new RN will be approximately $10 per hour more than what I am able to pay her as a seasoned paramedic. I will say it again, until the processes that are used to determine reimbursement for an ambulance call are updated, the problems facing EMS in the state of Minnesota will not be resolved. In the last 4 years, the gross revenue of my service has remained relatively flat, but the price of a new ambulance in the post-COVID world is 50% higher than what it was prior to COVID. Everything, gas, equipment, supplies, wages, everything is significantly more expensive, but my revenue has not changed. I've had to increase wages to remain competitive, but yet I'm still behind other comparable medical fields in the wage war. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Michael Schultz. Followed by Bjorn Peterson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the House Finance and Policy Committee. My name is Michael Schultz. I'm the Director of Operations for Sanford Ambulance, Thief River Falls, and Bagley. Sanford Health opposes House File 4738 for multiple reasons. First of all, House File 4738 would create a structure that is very different from any other licensing board in the Minnesota state government. We fail to see the virtue in moving from the EMSRB structure that is oversight board to a single person accountable only to the governor. Having a political appointee as a director would lead EMS oversight heavily swayed by political interests and director changes when the governor is elected into office. The MSRB has strong leadership now and has made many improvements outlined in the OLA audit. The MSRB can accomplish all of the duties outlined in House File 4738 with its current structure. Emergency Medical Services has always had substantial oversight by physicians, both in day-to-day medical practice locally and in the EMS system regulation. It is imperative that physicians continue the meaningful authority in EMS regulation. House File 4738 would eliminate that and concentrate power to one person. Minnesota's EMS system is not broken. It functions at a very high level and saves lives every day. We would like to see the MSRB find improvements in the current regulatory framework. We urge you not to move this bill forward and to address the real issues in the EMS system, workforce and reimbursement. Everything else is unnecessary distraction. This concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Bjorn Peterson and then Mike Juntunen. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Bjorn Peterson. I'm an emergency physician, a paramedic, an EMS medical director representing multiple agencies in the East Metro part of the Twin Cities, and the chief medical officer for a multi-state air medical transport agency. My testimony today is in opposition to House File 4738. As has been stated by several of my colleagues, the history of EMS is rooted deeply in physician oversight. You have received verbal and written testimony from physicians and non-physicians alike regarding this fact, as well as presented with several position statements from national organizations, which include references to peer-reviewed literature affirming the importance of physician involvement at the highest levels of EMS oversight. This proposed bill would reduce the physician voice considerably and eliminate the political checks and balances inherent in a multidisciplinary regulatory board. None of the other health professions, licensing, or oversight boards in this state delegate such broad authority to a single individual. The authority to regulate such a critical component of our public safety infrastructure should warrant the accountability of a regulatory board with a diversity of experience and expertise rather than a single individual. Given that the primary issues facing EMS in Minnesota today are recruitment, retention, and reimbursement, I fail to see how a comprehensive restructuring of the EMSRB to this degree would address any of those issues. I do appreciate Representative Hewitt's engagement with EMS. However, I hope the committee will reconsider this bill and further engage with stakeholders to identify the most appropriate path forward regarding the oversight of EMS in Minnesota. Thank you for your time today and for hearing my concerns.
Thank you for your testimony. And finally, we have Mike Juntunen. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Michael Juntunen, and I am the incoming president for the Minnesota Ambulance Association. I appreciate the time today. I do also want to thank Representative Hewitt for the attention he's given EMS over the years, but I am also here in strong opposition of House File 4738. I don't want to repeat a lot of the testimony that's been given today. There's been a lot of great comments, but I do want to reiterate that EMS is facing issues specifically around workforce and funding. Our funding model is outdated. CMS and Medicaid rates are not covering the true cost of care. Changing the EMSRB does not address this issue. That is not a problem with the current executive director. Our workforce issue, since the pandemic, we're seeing people leaving the field in droves. We need to find ways to recruit and retain team members into EMS. That is also not something that's under the purview of EMSRB. And those are the largest issues we're facing today. Since the EMSRB's inception and named in 95 and started in 96, it's allowed us to build a system in Minnesota that has some of the top CARES data in the country. It has been heavily, it allows us for a heavy amount of innovation. We have been able to develop a good system here in Minnesota for patient care. The issues we are facing today are more administrative, but outside the purview of the EMSRB. This bill would create new issues and new complications in an already stressed system. This is not a time to have a complete upset and redo the EMSRB. We would ask that we more turn towards the OLA recommendations and focus on enhancing and strengthening the current EMSRB along with the current board makeup. And we do recognize that the EMSRB has been doing a phenomenal job over the last couple of years. So thank you.
All right, thank you for your testimony. So with that, that concludes our testifiers who were signed up. I have a couple members on the list, but I have also an amendment. So let's take a couple of member comments and then we'll go to the amendment if a member cares to offer that. So, okay, Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to start out by thanking Representative Hewitt for bringing this bill forward and for the work that you have put into it. I know that it has been really important to you, and you have indulged me in many conversations, especially recently in regards to this. I represent a suburban community that has some struggles with the current model and doesn't feel that there is accountability and responsiveness to the authorized ambulance service. I'm not great. This isn't my technology or this isn't my language. So I apologize for maybe getting the terms wrong. But I think that I'm hopeful that as this bill continues to move forward and as this bill is continued to be worked on, that that will be addressed and that the communities that I serve can feel as though they are being represented in the outcome. So I appreciate the work and appreciate that you have heard my concerns and will continue to work on them.
All right. Thank you, Representative Akam. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to commend the author. When I was on the EMSRB, I never saw such unanimity amongst the different participants. And I think it's driven more by the fact that there's hope for change and improvement. Your three R's won't happen without, if you don't have the people, you don't have the physical resources, and you don't have the funding. And I think that's where a lot of the passion is coming from, is we see a crisis. And it varies to what degree, but I think almost everywhere We see the crisis of people. And having been on the Legislative Audit Commission for, well, since I've been here, I've seen a lot more severe audit comments on different departments and agencies, but I haven't seen the response being to just push aside what you have and go to a new. So I think that's where some of the concerns are. The intent to do something is great, but I think there needs to be a little bit more action with the people that are directly involved in the formation. And I hope that that happens, because in greater Minnesota, we've got some huge issues of not just thin, but times where we have no coverage. Thank you.
And Representative Hewitt, I know you want to respond, but I've got a couple more members. If you could, like, make notes, and then, because otherwise we'll, right, you know, so we can move things along. Because I know you have a lot to say. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Hewitt, and also to all of you who came to testify today. You know, last year we heard a lot, and we continue to hear a lot about, you know, if you want to change things, you got to go back to the community. And I mean, this is a community that stepped up and has worked within a very convoluted healthcare system that doesn't reimburse well, Representative Hewitt, and they've figured out, and I want to thank you too. You've spent an enormous amount of your career in this field, just like Representative Backer. And I think we're all here trying to do the right thing. And I appreciate you pushing this ball up a steep hill. Because I think change is difficult. We've heard it today. But I think we've also heard that this might be, you know, a little bit too quick. And hopefully, you know, you're going to continue to talk about this and find this way. I think we've heard, loud, that handing over this kind of power to one person is going to be a challenge. And that wasn't in the OLA report. You know, they didn't say to dismantle the EMSRB. They didn't say that. And I think that if we look at the updated reports from the OLA, the board is making some dramatic changes and moving in the right direction. And we have challenges in the metro with density increases, and there's challenges in greater Minnesota with broad ranges that these people have to cover. And we all know that a biggest part of this issue is the funding mechanism. You know, how do we do this? I mean, there's other things to discuss. Maybe there needs to be, you know, taxing districts. Who knows what that looks like? What I'm saying is that I would love to be able to support this for you because you work so hard, but I can't, because there's too many partners in this important industry, in our healthcare industry, that are looking at this and saying there's dire consequences if we go this way. And the fear is there, and it's real. Again, I appreciate you bringing this forward, and I hope that you ratchet this thing back and we dig in together and try to solve this thing in a different way. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hurt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing this bill forward. I guess I just had a quick question for you, and you can, and maybe you and I can talk on this offline, but you know, in St. Paul, our system is very different. Like, it's a public service. It's run by our city. They leave with our firefighters, and that was really critical in that fire a couple of months ago where a family, the father was at work, and that fire ended up killing half of the family members. A bunch of them were, you know, babies and children, but three of them survived, and it was having that EMS respond at the same time that the fire truck did, that saved those people's lives, right? And so I think that I understand what you're trying to do here, and I actually I'm very supportive of it, because I would love to see if there's data that shows that in places like St. Paul, where their EMS is run as a public service and the city runs it versus a private entity, do we see different outcomes, and does the data look different? So I would love to maybe just see if there's if it's different, and if, like, in an entity like in St. Paul, was the study that was done, did it include those types of setup? You know, and I want to just speak a little bit to rural Minnesota, that I went out, actually I was in Moorhead at an event 2 years ago, and this particular issue came up, and they asked me, and they said, why can't EMS be public service run by the government? Because they've seen when that's happened. They've had different response times and different interactions with EMS. And so I didn't have the answer then, but I'm really glad that you're working on it, because this is what I'm hearing from rural Minnesota as well. So thank you so much.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. I also want to thank Dr. Stevens for acknowledging the tragedy in Burnsville. I represent that district, and so appreciate your acknowledgement of the sacrifice. I also support the work that you're doing, Representative Hewitt. To me, when I look at it and I've read the reports and think about the impact of a fragmented system, to me, which we have now, to me that's a recipe for inconsistency and the type of problems we're seeing in access to care. I do have to challenge a bit the claims I've heard from many respectfully that we have a good system that's working, because I think we all believe and see that that's a problem. I come at it from a lens on the patient side and the funding, because with the small level of funding from private pay, revenue recapture is a tool that is being used, and it's on the back of people who are not choosing to need a service, and so yet they're being asked to give up their tax returns to pay their ambulance bills. To me, this is a symptom of a problem that isn't, of a system that isn't working. And so I look forward to having the commitment of the state saying, we believe that EMS is a public good and we're going to treat it like that in an integrated and synthesized way. Thank you.
Representative Bierman, and then we're going to go to the, then I'll let Representative Hewitt have a few words, and then we'll go to the amendment. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to also thank all the people who came out today, the providers of EMS, who I've seen what you do up close and really admire your work, and you are a critical part of our healthcare system. So just want to thank you for being here today and expressing your views on the bill. I also want to thank Representative Hewitt, as Representative Akam said. Representative Hewitt will talk to us individually about this issue day in and day out, and I've heard more about it from Rep. Hewitt than anyone probably, because it is something that he's lived it, and he's working to help address it. The needs are great out there. I've been in individual hospital settings where there's EMS issues, and there's a lot of issues. It's a complex system that we have now. So I want to support this bill moving forward to keep the discussion going, because I think coming in front of this committee, hearing from all of you and having the conversation on both sides here is very critical to us keeping this front burner, and that's where it should be, because it is such a critical component of our infrastructure health system. So thank you all for being here today. Thank you, Rep. Hewitt.
And just as a reminder, members, we're going till 12:30 today. So Representative Hewitt, but not on this bill.
I have 4 pages of stuff to talk about.
Okay, you're on.
I understand, Madam Chair, and I'm going to make this as brief as possible. Okay, I want to first address the physicians in the room. Yes, we did put an advisory committee just for physicians. I want to clarify, because I'm communicating with my Senator Seeberger here at the same time, we are willing to change that, and it's so good to see physicians stand up and get involved. We would like to actually have a physician at the same level that this director's at, that reports to the governor, because this is important. As we move forward with innovation in the state, like the Sprint Medic model, we need them at our side. The physician, we need to move community health, paramedicine. We need to look at innovation with technology and telemedicine. We need the physicians in a director role. So I am totally into amending this bill for there. I think they need to be at the table, and they need to be at the same level as the new director. Get to the audit where Representative Quam was talking about. One thing, this agency has been audited several times since 2002, and it's all financial pretty much. Some were good, some were not so good. This agency has been looked at several times. But as far as them saying that we should blow the agency up, for a better word, I looked at multiple audits, and that's not what we look at our auditors to tell us. Our auditors tell us what's going on, and it's really up to our critical thinking. This is my opinion, but it's up to our critical thinking to try to work within those parameters or to do something different. And I've seen looking, because I've looked for answers. I really did. This is not my first option and not Senator Seeberger's first option. She opposed me for a while, and the truth is that this is what we came up with because it's what we saw being probably one of the best options to keep it in the forefront. And everybody says this is a board. I wish it was simply a board. This board regulates pensions. This board regulates commerce with their PSAs. Nowhere else do we have anywhere else in government that you call 911, the ambulance comes, we don't give you a choice of what ambulance is coming, which is fair. But then, basically, if you don't pay your bill, like Representative Ryer said, we go get the money for them out of their tax return. We got to have some regulations over that. On top of it, it's a big public safety entity. It has roles in public health. It has roles everywhere. This is not a simple licensing board. In pharmacy, all we do is tell them, you know, what they have to do with their drugs. We don't tell them where they're going to be, how they're going to be, or how they're going to act, other than their professional licensing. This has a whole slew of things. This has government written all over it, and with them asking for reimbursement, guess who else comes in the door here? As much as we hate to do that, because, again, I felt like I was at the State of the Union as my Republican colleagues were talking. I was nodding my head a lot. You guys should get that one. But the truth is that they're right. But when we talk about reimbursement, the state has to be in the room. We have to be on top of this. And this is so important because, yes, I don't see the feds coming in to help these people at all. Since I worked with them, we're still fighting that fight. The state's going to have to come in and subsidize this, and we're looking at that. But we can't take that first step without organizing a department that, yes, it's a political appointment, it's there, but every commissioner is a political appointment. And what keeps a department running is not necessarily that head, it's that staff that stays there. So I think I hit on my most valuable points, and I know the chair wants to get on here, so if there's questions that I missed, I'd be happy to answer them, but I think we're good.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. So there is a DE2 amendment, so the conversation continues here. Does anyone want to offer the DE2 amendment?
I will, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Backer moves the DE2 to your amendment.
Yes. First of all, in regards, I have very much and will continue to work with Representative Hewitt that I call a friend. We have served in this industry for a number of years, but what the DE does is a couple of things here. For it does retain the EMSRB board, and this was a proposal that was agreed upon last session by the Ambulance Association, the State Fire Chiefs, and the EMS board out of the OLA recommendation. What this right now seems to be, as we have heard, probably the most a proposal that we can, industry and others can come agreement upon. We need to make sure folks in this room, and I know Representative Hewitt would agree, nonpartisan. The challenge as an EMT, and I have had the opportunity and pleasure to visit with Senator Seeberger and Representative Hewitt, during this committee, our pager went off, and this agency, this new agency, in my opinion, and several other people, does not address those three R's. This agency right now is not, with all the power that it gets, is not the right choice for the right care. It's just not. I toured the state, had the opportunity, along with Senator Seeberger and Representative Hewitt, to go to a lot of corners of the state. It's retention, recruitment, and reimbursement. And this agency, and unfortunately, folks, we have a track record. There is a flaw assumption in this bill. And that flaw assumption is that this agency will get it right. We have seen problems, and I'm not going to say it will happen, but whenever you have when you have absolute power in one position, that can lead to challenges. And this weekend when I got back, I was on call all day Friday, 24-hour shift, 24-hour shift Saturday, 24-hour shift until I left for St. Paul yesterday morning, which I had to wait to leave because my brother was late because he took over. He was running late, so I couldn't leave till about 7 o'clock that morning. This agency, I'm trying to think, and I know Representative Hugh and I will continue to work with this. How does it address my first responders in Beardsley, my first responders in Browns Valley, and me, who when I'm in the district, I'm serving? And I just don't see that, Representative Hewitt. You and I have had great discussions, and I respect you trying to move forward with something. But we are assuming a government agency will solve this problem. I don't see that happening. Not in the structure, because we have a director that has absolute power. And that is a concern of mine. It is. There's not that check and balance in the system. And I've been visiting with people yesterday after our conversation. How can we get more check and balance in this? So until that, I'm moving this DE proposal forward because, like I said, the Ambulance Association, the State Fire Chiefs, the EMS Board, in response to it, has came up with this, and with the possible other amendment on the board, amendment that is that we may or may not take up, putting this into MDH to be absorbed, really, in my opinion, we just, EMS again gets lost in the beast of the belly, and so forth. I don't see that as a reasonable solution. And right now, the EMSRB board has made a lot of positive moves, and we have to be focused on what we heard in the task force, out in the task force, retention, recruitment, and reimbursement. And I know you and I have had this great discussion, and we will continue to do it. But with that said, and I would move for the DE, and those are the reasons why. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Teal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try and be quick. I would second this amendment here. I have had the experience of ambulance services four times this year in Northwest Mental or Medical. My husband was transported down to St. Cloud and all the way up in Warren, Minnesota. So I've had experience in a lot of different areas. And sometimes I've been the rider. Sometimes I've been the rider in the front. And sometimes I've been in the back. Not what I would like, but very loved all the services that were provided. And I learned that you can't ride in a North Memorial ambulance in the front, because that's their ruling. That's fine. But in when I went to Grand Forks with my husband, I had to, because I was going to say, yes, you can provide services. And it was in northern Minnesota during a storm. So the only way I was going to get there was in the ambulance going around. Highway 2 shuts down visibility, and then they'd quit cleaning the road. But we made it. And the question was whether we were going to Fargo or Grand Forks because of where the ambulance could make it. So, hearing all of this, I have heard, and I certainly do not work with the intensity that you have, Rep. Hewitt and Representative Backer, and I really appreciate all the work. But watching this change that is being suggested, I do not think will service rural Minnesota. And this is a side conversation you and I have had about, but our NEMTs, our non-emergency medical transport, is a problem, because there are many times people do not need to be in an ambulance if they had made their clinic appointment that day, if they had been in some area. And folks, there's such a huge difference between rural Minnesota and the metro area. Yes, I know it's time hard to transport sometimes, but you have so many more options than we do in rural Minnesota. I can't transport my aunt when she was in a wheelchair because I couldn't move her from the wheelchair to the car. It wasn't possible. I had to have an NMT do it. And we got what she needed done. But the importance of this amendment, I believe, is to enhance, work with the recommendations, and offering what it is that we can serve our people with. And I need to say I thank you very much for all of you to come down here, whether you're coming from rural Minnesota or the metro area. What you do and how you manage that. Those ambulance members, if you have not toured an ambulance, an air flight, to see the technology that is involved, you no longer get in an ambulance and wonder what will happen to you when you get to the hospital. You will get into an ambulance and you will go right into surgery, or you will go right into whatever needs to do. The doctor already knows what's coming. And the technology that we have is higher techs than my tractors, and they can drive themselves. I don't want to be in an ambulance with it driving by itself, by the way. I just really think we need to think about this way of enhancing the EMS board that is there already, and we work with them because they know the corners of the world. They know Minnesota and what we can provide. And with that, Madam Chair, could I ask for a roll call?
Okay, roll call, yep, having been requested. Okay, so we're going to vote on the amendment. I'm going to make a comment before we vote on the amendment. And I was kind of holding my comment from the, but it's, we're all talking really about the same thing, whether we should have the new agency as proposed by Representative Hewitt or whether we should just tweak the EMSRB as is in the amendment. You know, the first thing I want to say is change is hard. Change is hard. Nobody wants to switch the thing they're doing for something they don't exactly know what it is. And that's true. Change is hard. I think in this case, it's imperative, though. It is imperative. You know, I've heard a few things I want to respond to. A number of people have said the OLA didn't tell us to dissolve the EMSRB. And I think Representative Hewitt said it. I want to repeat it. The OLA doesn't tell us what to do. But they were very strong in that report in saying that this board is rife with conflict of interest and changes need to be made. And I think that change absolutely needs to be made. The other thing I would say is that this change is not intended to, and of course will not, fix every problem. But it is a platform upon which changes can be made to address some of the problems. We have seen that the current EMSRB really cannot do that. It can make little changes. It can't make the big changes that are needed. Finally, I want to just respond. I heard the term political autocrats used, and I heard different people refer to our agency, our commissioners, as autocrats. Representative Hewitt did say we, of course, have a lot of agencies that cover a lot of things, and these are appointed commissioners, exactly what we're proposing here. And they are not political autocrats. I mean, that is, I have to say, I think that the Commissioner of Human Services, Commissioner of Department of Health, who are come in front of this committee, would be very surprised to know that they are political autocrats. They respond to the legislature. They work hard to respond to their constituencies. They respond to their staffs. And while it is true that a change in the governor means a change in commissioners, there is a continuity there, and I think that EMS is so important, so universally important to everyone in this state, that I've never seen it to be partisan, and I cannot imagine that whoever the governor would be, that this would become a partisan issue, that somehow some new commissioner would be punishing EMS services or in some way. That just seems impossible. So while I understand the concern around this, I think it's an incredibly important bill. We all would like to do more with funding. We all would like to do more with recruitment. And we're simply not really going to be able to do that unless we make a change in the way this thing is organized. So I appreciate that very much what you've got here for us. And I'm going to urge members to vote no on this amendment. And Representative Hewitt, before we go to the vote, do you have anything else on the amendment, or can we vote and then you'll have a final word on the bill?
No, vote on the amendment.
All right. So the clerk will take the roll on the amendment.
Chair Liebling?
No.
Liebling? No. Vice Chair Bierman?
Behrman, no.
Behrman, no. Lead Schumacher, excused. Representative Akam?
No.
Akam, no. Representative Backer?
Backer, yes.
Backer, yes. Representative Bonner? Excused. Representative Carroll?
No.
Carroll, no. Representative Elkins?
No.
Elkins, no. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager?
No.
Hemmingson-Yeager, no. Representative Hurd?
No.
Hurd, no. Representative Keel?
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nadeau?
Yes.
Nadeau, aye. Representative New Brindley? Excused. Representative Perryman?
Perryman, aye.
Perryman, aye. Representative Quam?
Yes.
Quam, aye. Representative Ryer?
No.
Ryer, no. Representative Smith?
No.
Smith, no.
There being six ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. So to the bill as amended, and there is another another amendment, but I don't know if anyone wanted to offer that one.
I just want to brief before, on the final bill, just a brief.
Okay. Representative Backer.
Yeah, first of all, the Madam Chair would like to do a roll call on the final passage of the bill.
Okay.
And I will be brief because I know we have a lot. And, again, Representative Hewitt, Senator G. Seeberger, we have worked really hard. The way that this agency is structured right now, I do not believe would be the right choice to give the right care. So I would ask my members to vote no on the bill as it is right now. We need more check and balances as we move forward. Because again, recruitment, retention, and reimbursements are the three issues we heard in greater in our task force traveling the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, a final word, Representative Hewitt. Maybe you want to say something about that amendment.
The one that we did not vote for?
No, no, the one that you put on in the beginning, which is the
Is that the Sprint Medic?
The one with your pilot project on it.
Oh, the pilot project, which I'm excited about. And this is where we need our docs, right? This is a great model. I grew up in this model. It was a Sprint Medic model. We used it in Maplewood. It was a place that we put police officers that we needed to hire but yet didn't have the budget for it, so they ended up being police officer paramedics. Also, Burnsville, I believe, used this model. I know Cottage Grove did. But we need to look at this model as possibly being something in outstate where Representative Backer, that's exactly the areas we need to use it in. Right now in northern Minnesota, up in the range, we have a fire. We have a big fire burning. We have 90-minute documented response times. And we believe that in all hands on board, I mean, we need the industry to come in and say, maybe this will work. But we need help because we need to make sure that, I'm going to go back to this real quick, right person, right place, right time before we get the other R's in there. We need to make sure we get responders on the scene. I've been working with a local surgeon here in town. He really feels that it has to be an ALS position, which I totally agree with. We see better outcomes with early ALS, it's a paramedic. And basically what we need is that person to get there first because we see better outcomes with cost and with outcomes if we use somebody like that to get early interventions, and then the ambulance can follow. So I don't want to go too far. I know, call 30.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. So with that, the clerk will take the roll. I will renew the motion that House File 4738, as amended, be re-referred to state and local government finance and policy. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Vice Chair Behrman.
Behrman, aye.
Behrman, aye. Lead Schumacher. Excused. Representative Akam.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Backer.
No.
Backer, no. Representative Bonner. Bonner, excused. Representative Carroll.
Aye.
Carroll, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Aye.
Hemmingson-Yeager, aye. Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Hurd, aye. Representative Keel.
Thiel, no.
Thiel, no. Representative Murphy?
No.
Murphy, no. Representative New Brindley? Excused. Representative Perryman?
Perryman, no.
Perryman, no. Representative Quam? Quam, no. Representative Ryer?
Aye.
Ryer, aye. Representative Smith?
Aye.
Smith, aye.
There being 10
aye.
Oh my gosh, sorry. Representative Nadeau?
Do I get to vote twice?
It won't help.
He gets four, five times.
Wait. No.
No. Representative Nadeau. I thought the number seemed odd here. Okay. 6, 10 to 6.
All right. There being 10 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to State Gov.
Thank you, committee.
Thank you. Thank you to all the testifiers. Okay, the next bill on the agenda is House File 4755, which is mine, and so Representative Bierman is going to take the gavel. Maybe you want to stay there so you don't catch what I've got. Here. Here you go.
That's all you need?
That's all you need, I think. Here.
Battle's not over.
Did you have the annotated agenda?
Here's the annotated agenda. She's on it.
Folks, please leave quietly if you're leaving so we can keep on with the agenda here.
All right. Representative or Chair Liebling is ready. We are going to move. Representative Liebling moves that House File 4755 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Yes.
Please proceed, Chair
Liebling. Thank you very much, Representative Bierman. So this bill is sort of a correction and clarification to something that we passed last year. So if you all recall, we had a lot of discussion about trying to remove the private managed care organizations from our public programs. We kind of hit a brick wall with that because we found out that a lot of them are getting quite a bit of funding through. A lot of our hospitals and other healthcare providers are getting a lot of funding through the managed care organizations through this mysterious program called 340B, which is a federal drug program. We had a hearing, an informational hearing, where we learned a little bit about the 340B program. In our bill from last year, we, for the very first time, required organizations that are using this program to do some reporting. And the purpose for that, from my point of view, was when they told us, you know, we can't change the way we pay for healthcare because we will lose a lot of money through this program that we're getting through this program, naturally legislators wanted to know, well, how much is it? Because we had the thought, well, maybe we could hold them harmless and make and change our system and be able to give them the amount of money they would be otherwise losing. But it turns out that nobody really had very good numbers. So we put some reporting language in our bill, and then a couple things happened. One is that we found out that we were, in fact, nation-leading in doing that, that no other state has been able to get reporting on this, that even the feds are really interested to know where this money is going, how this is all happening. The Department of Health very helpfully pulled together stakeholders, pulled together experts, and got to work to see if the language could be clearer and just to work better, because this hadn't been done before. And so what you have before you is the product of that work that is clarifying the what we will want for reporting from them. And if you look on the back of the bill, the printed bill that you all have in your packets, it gives you the language that is current law that was passed in our bill from last year. So you have that to look at. And then you have the bill before you. So That is the bill. I think if you have questions about specifics in it, as you may imagine, this is pretty deep stuff, pretty complicated stuff, and I probably wouldn't be able to answer a lot of the very, very specific questions about it. But the idea here is to get a handle on how much money is flowing through this 340B program. And in particular, I'm interested in how much the medical assistance program is paying through this program that we would otherwise not be paying. So this is Minnesota taxpayers are, I believe, paying a lot more than they otherwise would be. You know, not to say the money isn't going to a good place. That's not the point here. The point is just that we need to know what is going on with the money that we are stewards of. So with that, I'll take questions or I don't know if we have other testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Liebman. We do have a testifier, which we'll hear first. Or the testifier is Mr. Danny Eckert from the Minnesota Hospital Association. Welcome, Mr. Eckert. Introduce yourself, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Danny Eckert with the Minnesota Hospital Association. Through continuous work with the Department of Health, our members are making final preparations to provide the initial round of reporting in a few weeks on April 1st. This first in the nation state level reporting on the federal 340B drug pricing program has required a significant investment of time and attention, not just from our member hospitals, but from all covered entities, safety net providers that can participate in the program. House File 4755 adds new reporting elements while keeping the initial April 1st, 2024 deadline, which immediately led to concerns on what would be due and when. After speaking with Chair Liebling and the Department of Health, we believe our concerns on when the new reporting elements are actually due will be met, but and still need clarity in language. As such, we are standing by to work with both to ensure that clarity is achieved. Our initial concern on the reporting deadline is the specific addition of administered outpatient drugs throughout the reporting requirements. Administered drugs, when provided, are not reimbursed directly. They're bundled in a hospital diagnostic related group. To determine the specific reimbursement for administered drugs, as is asked on lines 2.17 and 2.18, will require an entirely new and costly methodology to unbundle a specific diagnostic related group. To our knowledge, this is not regularly done, if at all ever, and therefore we ask Chair Liebling and the department to engage with MHA and our members to ensure appropriate clarity and language with the understanding that precision may not be possible. In closing, the federal 340B drug pricing program has served as an integral support system for safety net hospitals and providers in Minnesota and across the nation since 1992. It directly supports patient care and services, patient services and access where others can't or simply won't, and it is woven into the level of care that all Minnesotans have come to expect and deserve. With that, I again thank Chair Liebling and the department for clarifying reporting expectations. Still would like to see some clarity in language there. And for that, I stand with any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Eckert. And Chair Liebling, yeah. Would you like to respond?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just I was speaking with Mr. Chun about this just before the committee, and he helpfully pointed out to me that because the bill won't be enacted until well after the deadline, there's no confusion really about this year's reporting. So initially there was some question about what should happen by this April 1st, but clearly this bill wouldn't be enacted until well after that. So it is what it is for this year. All right, thank you.
All right, thank you, Chair Liebling. And I don't, are there any other people in the public that would like to testify on this? Seeing none, we'll go to member questions. And first, Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Chair Bierman. So I think this question is to Mr. Eckert. So can you give me a ballpark, the anticipated cost to Minnesota's 340B program participants to actually identify to report on this bill? I mean, is there an estimated cost? Is it estimated cost? That's it.
Oh, sorry about that. Thank you, Representative Doe. Please proceed, Mr. Eckert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Doe, we can get back to you on that. I think there's certain elements, especially with the new addition of the minister drugs, where there's a lot of unknowns, but there is cost of time and staff and also bringing in vendors to assess how those claims can be identified and specific reimbursement can be, again, unbundled from the DRG as an example. So we can follow up with you. There are additional reporting elements in this round that do provide or require now additional costs related to the program. So that would be included there. But we can, again, I'll just reiterate, we can follow up with you on that.
Thank you, Mr. Eckert. Follow up?
And do we know, either Chair Liebling or Mr. Eckert, do we know how many 340B program participants there are in Minnesota, like RFQ-8Cs, eligible for these county-based purchasing programs? Do we know the number of 340B program participants in the state?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Chair Liebling.
Thank you. I think we know. I don't personally know. But, yeah, there are a lot of different entities. FQHCs are eligible. My understanding is they don't all participate, but there are a number of different entities, and I think that we have a list, but I couldn't tell you exactly. It's known. I don't know if Mr. Eckert knows how many.
Mr. Eckert?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doe, off the top of my head, I don't have that specific number, but it is a federal program, so the Health Resources Services Administration has the list for Minnesota broken down, not only by the type of covered entity they are, a critical access hospital or a federally qualified health center, but also the aggregate number. So we can follow up with you with that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Eckert. Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. And I want to thank Representative Liebling, Chair Liebling, for bringing this forward. This is a needed bill, I think, to bring sunshine to this area. As you know, I worked at Hennepin Health, Metropolitan Health Plan, formerly known as general counsel to it. And this is new to me. I mean, I always tried to get to the bottom of PBMs, and it was a never-ending task, and I just simply didn't have the time to do it. I was the general and only counsel, as I used to say, and there just simply wasn't enough time to do it. It was critically important, and so thank you for bringing this forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Carroll. And seeing no further questions, Representative Liebling renews your motion to lay over House File 4755, and with that, House File 4755 is laid over.
All right, thank you.
We have time.
I think so.
One more.
Thank you. So this is actually my bill, but it's really a department bill. So I'm just going to do it from here because Ms. Bobst is going to describe it. We only have a few minutes, so I think what we just do is kind of get started. The motion is, this is House File 4397, and the motion is for it to be laid over for possible inclusion. So why don't we just get started on it, and then we do have a hard stop at 12:30, and then we'll pick it up in another meeting. So welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, I'm Ann Bobst, and I'm with the Department of Human Services. House File 4397 is the Department's Healthcare Administration Policy Bill. This bill primarily contains technical and clarifying changes for the Medical Assistance and Minnesota Care Program. So I'm just going to walk through the bill briefly and then happy to take questions if there's time. Section 1 makes a technical clarification to the intent of language passed last session regarding the circumstances in which an overpayment of state-funded medical assistance and Minnesota Care can be collected through judgment by operation of law. Section 2 repeals the Medical Care Surcharge Fund report. This is a technical report that is not used for any internal decision making, nor do we believe it's used for external decision making. Section 3 clarifies in statute that state and federal tax credits, rebates, and refunds are considered excluded income and are excluded as assets for 12 months after the month of receipt when determining MA eligibility for people who are age 65 and older, blind, or disabled. This aligns with current policy and practice. Section 4 clarifies in statute that the asset verification system, or AVS, is used to verify assets, not specifically unreported accounts as in current statute. Section 5 corrects a cross-reference regarding the recuperative care room and board rate based on other statutory changes that passed in 2023. Section 6 clarifies that the family planning rate increase passed in 2023 applies only to community clinics, which aligns with other rate increases in this section and the fiscal note for this change. Section 7 cleans up a cross-reference in Minnesota care statute related to the 2023 dental coverage expansion. And finally, Section 8 allows recovery notices regarding the probate of estates to be sent to the commissioner via electronic means in addition to first-class mail. So thank you to the committee for considering these changes, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Well, thank you. That was pretty quick. So we have some time that members could ask questions about the bill if there are any questions. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on the bill? Yeah, expected a line. Okay. Representative Nadeau.
We can't. Thank you, Madam Chair. We can't let her go without at least one
okay,
question.
You're on.
Can you, in Section 5, can you talk about the changes? I remember there being some confusion between the Minnesota, I think it was Minnesota Care versus another population, but is that what the recuperative care facility rate modification is doing here? Is that correcting that?
Ms. Bobst.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nadeau. No, it is just correcting a cross-reference to the rate that will be used for recuperative care services. It doesn't change anything about the implementation or what that rate is. It's just updating statute to align with other statutory changes that were made last year.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you. That was boring. Thank you.
That's their goal, to be boring on these policy bills. Any other questions or comments from members? It looks like you all want to go early.
Well, we're
okay.
Actually late.
All right. Well, with that, House File 4397 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Ms. Fox. And remember, members, tomorrow bright and early, we're going to be in room 10, right? Room 10. At 8:30 to hear scope licensing and scope bills. So with that, we are adjourned.